bitch please.
Oh, bitch please my ass. You want a sandwich?
Dig that. Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man. I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your way.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast. And all I have to say about today's guest is, good. And I'll be back in a moment to introduce you to today's guest here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Well, folks, the season is finally here. What season? Baseball and softball season, of course. Are you ready? What about you players out there? Are you ready? Is your equipment ready? What about that glove you've been using? What about that uniform you've been wearing year after year? Well, I tell you what, if it needs to be repaired, bring it to JB's Glove Repair. He'll have you together in no time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair. With over 30 plus years of experience, he'll have you ready by game time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the JB Low Tech Podcast. And today's guest is Pat Montague of J.D. Hoyt's Restaurant, downtown Minneapolis. I thought Pat would be a good guest to talk about these times that we're going through with restaurants during COVID, and also kind of go back over our friendship, which is pretty close to 30 years now, and I know it's been a while, and go over some other things. So how's it going, Pat?
Going great. Thanks for adding me to your podcast. It's awesome, JB. Thank you.
No, pleasure is all mine, just like the food I ate last night. Yeah, as I told Pat yesterday, it was my... You know, you normally give up something for Lent, and I decided to buy into something for Lent this year, and that was to go to Hoyt's every Friday, because I had two favorite restaurants in town, and I lost one of them because of COVID, so I didn't want to lose another. So,
we do really appreciate the support, JB. You know that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I normally ask my guests, how did you get started in the restaurant business, or, you know, what made you turn that way or look towards that?
Sure. You know, I was 13 years old. My mom was a food and beverage director of a Holiday Inn back in the day, and she called me in to do dishes on a Saturday morning, and that was my introduction into the world of restaurants. I was a pot and pan washer for the day, and I was devastated and forever changed from that moment on.
Well,
but I turned out, I got hired at J.D. Hoyt's. I was working at a little breakfast place called Eggies, and we went on an outdoor baseball trip with a buddy of mine, Michael Pantaleo, better known as Pinto.
Yes.
And his brother is Junior, of course, who's still a barman. You know, he's been with me for 15, 20 years. But Pinto asked me to go on an outdoor baseball trip back when there was a group trying to save the old Met.
Okay.
And these guys were all fanatics about outdoor baseball, and it was right before they were opening up the Metrodome, long before that. So
right.
we went down and saw a Madison Muskie game and Quad City Cubs, and then we went down and saw a Cubby game with Philly, and then went up to County and saw the Brewers and Twins, and stayed for a doubleheader on Sunday, and came home, and they said, "Hey, you got to come work for us." And I didn't have any idea what they were doing, and they had my partners originally started a place called Ichabod's and moved to Sergeant Preston's and then opened up the Loom Cafe, and then eventually wanted a little more finer dining place than sports bars, and they opened up J.D. Hoyt's. And so they hired me as a prep cook a week before we opened up in 1984. And I was head chef after about a year or so, and then fell into it, and I just absolutely love it. It's been one of those careers for me that has been a challenge every single day, and now during COVID, it's the biggest challenge we've ever faced. So it's been a great run for 35 and a half years or so, somewhere in there. So it's been awesome.
Well, you seem to love it, and people love coming there. I mean, you have dignitaries that come in town. I remember when the buzz was when the during the Clinton administration, Janet Reno would blow in town to come there and have dinner.
Absolutely. One of the highest political people we've ever had at J.D. Hoyt's. And, of course, she was covered with security and sat with FBI agents. And it was really an interesting but wonderful moment for us at J.D. Hoyt's, because we get, we get actors, we get musicians, we get sports guys all the time, which is awesome because they absolutely love our food and they go out to eat a lot, with a lot of expendable cash. So it's great to see politicians come in. And we had, the vice president, Walter Mondale's eaten many times at Hoyt's. So, in fact, I don't know how long ago it was, a couple of years now, they had the back room. The whole Mondale family had the back room for dinner one night, which is great. So, yeah, that's been a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. I would hear the stories about certain NBA teams catering their plane from there or coming in. With my background in college sports, watching and hearing visiting teams come in town and their equipment managers or coaching staff, their designation was always is and still J.D. Hoyt's. So you guys must be doing something right.
You guys were very instrumental in that, JB, you and Todd and the rest of the crew and Dick Matz and God rest him. I mean, you guys were very, you guys loved our food and we loved you guys. I mean, I'm always an underdog, and I get that the guys that worked at the University of Minnesota, the coaches are all great, and we've had everybody from Lou Holtz to John Gutekunst all the way through Jerry Kill.
Right.
Coach Mason was a great big friend of ours. I mean, Fleck now with his guys. I mean, it's just been a great relationship with football, basketball, men's and women's sports.
Right.
And, of course, you guys being in the back of the house, we love you guys. You guys never get the accolades that you need to keep it all together. You're the glue that keeps everything rolling over there. And it's kind of funny how a lot of times the spotlight goes to the players or the coaches and never the guys that have been holding it together for years and years going on. So.
Well, and believe me, that's the way we like it. We're the first ones in so nobody sees us, and we're the last ones out so nobody sees us again. They might see us during the event if we lose our mind and do something crazy like Maddie would do, but like wander out on the field after a touchdown and get threatened by an threatened by an official. But anyway,
that's our guy.
Yeah, the closest I ever came to that, Pat, was a softball game, and I said something, and first base umpire thought I was talking to her. And I was like, "Whoa, no. I wasn't talking to you. Not to you. Talking to my own player." Just because if in college sports, if a member, a non coaching member of the staff gets tossed, the head coach gets tossed too. So I was
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, so I was like, oh no, you, this ain't going to be my blaze of glory. So, so she nodded and calmed down, and I was like, whew. But no, I saw many a thing happen with, believe me, with Dick Mattson. So And if I'm being too private here, weren't you instrumental in helping Dick and his sobriety?
Oh, very, very proud of that. Absolutely. You know, I'd seen Dick at his very worst and Dick at his very best. So,
right.
You know, he was never more proud than having his kid Keith. You know, and I mean that it kind of changed him a little bit. But he was struggling quite a bit with. You know, drinking and the pressures of that's, you know, college sports is extremely hard. And he came to me one day and talked to me about it, and we became dear friends, even closer than we were prior to that. I don't, you know, I have no judgment on people's lifestyles at all, but him and I, we played racquetball every day. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time together and a lot of conversations together. And I'll tell you, he was, he's, you know, in my heart, he's just a wonderful human being. And he was at a few low points and needed some help. And sure, I reach back and help as many people as I can. I haven't drank for like 34 and a half, 35 years, something like that. So being in the bar business, a little tougher than average. But, you know,
I was just
successful at it. So.
I was just about to ask you, how do you pull that off working in a bar restaurant business?
Well, you know, I love my bride. My wife's name is Cosette, and I love her very, very much. And so when we were together, she wouldn't marry me because she knew who I was. And we had lived together for years and whatever. And she's seen me at my worst and seen me at my best. And it's kind of a great story because I actually got sober 6 months before we got married, even though I know the wedding was on the docket for about a year ahead of time. It took me a while to realize I was an idiot. So, anyways, but I always say to guys, they always say, Patty, let's go up to the bar. Let me buy you a drink. And I said, okay. And I pull them up to the bar, you know, and we're at J.D. Hoyt's and we're talking and then laughing. And I said, okay. I said, yeah, you married? You in a relationship? He said, yeah. I said, okay, check that one off. I said, you got any money in the bank? He said, yeah. I said, yeah, okay, check that one off. You got a nice job? All right, check. How's your family relationship? Okay, check that off, because you're going to lose all of that if I start drinking with you. Because if I go down, you're going with me.
Right.
So, oh, no, okay, Penny, let's get you an orange juice. How about that?
No, I as a young man, as a student, saw Dick Mattson at his worst, and then – saw him through the transformation of becoming sober and him helping me through my college years. And then before he retired, he and I got to work as partners. So it was a full circle for me, and it was a great ride. You know, he was the driving force of me graduating from college. I had come to the University of Minnesota, got homesick, went back home for about 6 months, realized that I made a big mistake and I needed to come back and go to college. And I called him and he said, yeah, you can come back, but here are the things you got to do. Register, get to school, come back, work for me, and pay Harry Broadfoot the money you owe him. Because I had lived with Harry for 8 months, and I had run up some phone bills and whatnot.
Oh, sure.
You know, that was long before cell phones and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I can do that. And, you know, working for him gave me the money to pay Harry off, even though Harry would tell you I've never given him a dime. So
Right. That's Harry.
Yeah. But, no, he... I will say, and I've said this before, Dick Mattson was the heartbeat and the soul of that athletic department. You know, all he did was run the athletic equipment department, but everything kind of flowed through him. All coaches looked at him as a confidant. All student athletes looked to him as a father, grandfather by the time he left. And like you said, just a wonderful person.
Well, it's amazing how many lives, you know, that you guys in the equipment room really touch. I mean, a lot of guys at their youth that are very impressionable, and you know, Dick for a while at his worst, Dick for a while at his best. The memories that a lot of people take from their experiences in college, and the leadership that was shown coming out of that equipment room was tremendous. So for all of you guys, not just Dick, but for, you know, you guys are with the athletes probably more than the coaches are at times. And it's amazing how many guys you touch and the memories that are made. It's great. Men and women. It's just great. It's great.
Well, and you know, J.D. Hoyts has actually played a part in signing athletes, you know, because that's where the recruiting meals happen.
Yeah, we've had a great run with recruiting. And as of late, pre-COVID, when we were recruiting with Richard Pitino, instead of bringing the guys down, we'd go out to the house and they'd have the parents. And I still remember one evening that we were out at Richard's house doing a recruiting dinner, and I didn't know who the kid was at all. And then I see Richard Coffey and his wife come out. I've known Richard since he played at the U with you know, Clem years ago. So
yeah.
Richard, I remember hugging and our guy Richard Pitino was kind of new to the school, and he's looking at me going, "Well, how do you know, you guys are acting like best friends?" Kind of. He's looking at me like sideways because I'm the cook. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then to realize that his son Amir was being recruited for the U of M, I went, that's just a tremendous legacy, you know, to see the guys that play there and now their children are grown up and they're actually being looked at and coming to our school. It's just, it's awesome. It's tremendous.
Yeah, it by the time I made the transition out, I was starting to feel old, and Amir was one of those athletes I looked and went, "Oh my God, my classmates' children are starting to show up here."
Because
when I was at the U, Richard played basketball, and Sheba was a track person. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
You'd hear the stories about kids who have never had fine dining or close to fine dining in their life being brought to J.D. Hoyts and being blown away. It's like, whoa, what's going on here, this, that, and the other. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, that's our little gem there. But
it was great because we also did a lot of training table too then, so the guys
yes.
could see that they could get a little you know, a training table during the week from J.D. Hoyts, and yet that was a restaurant that they remember when they come back and they're in business or, you know, their professional lives of sports or whatever they do when they graduate college, and they bring their wives down or their kids down and they say, yeah, this is the first place I came to when they recruited me in Minnesota. And that's bad. And even guys like Daryl Thompson was in the other night. Again, mm-hmm. He's a great, great friend and a great customer of Hoyts. And, you know, one of his first visits was J.D. Hoyts when they brought him in, which was great. And here he is today. You know, he's a big hitter and a big-time guy and
right.
a big supporter of the U of M and a Boulder option. He's got a foundation going. I mean, it's just it's a tremendous, wonderful situation to be in. And here we are years later, and we're still doing the same thing we were doing back when these guys were 19, 18-year-old kids. You know, it's great.
Now, I hear a story about when Lawrence Maroney was brought in to J.D. Hoyts.
Okay, what's the story? I can neither confirm or deny at this point.
That had, you know, all this wonderful food options, and all he wanted was a hamburger.
Yeah, that was a true story. Yep.
It's like, dude, you can, you know, Mace is like, "Hey, Lawrence, you can have lobster, you can have this, you can have that, you can have the biggest steak in your life, this, that, and the other. I just want a hamburger."
Yep. Yeah, we got good burgers, man. Come on. Yeah, you know, some guys are very, you can tell when they come in, very simple guys, and they just want what they want, no matter what it is, whether it's a porterhouse
right.
or a burger. And we're able to do that for them in many aspects. I mean, one of the best recruiters that I've ever known was Silas McKinney.
Yes.
And boy, I tell you, when he had a kid that, you know, we needed it to you or whatever, and we do specials every night. It all depends on what the chef's doing. As mm-hmm. you've experienced, you've had a lot of our specials, but
right.
Silas would call up and give me the kid's name and Mr. Basketball from Ohio, let's just say, and you know, give the rundown. The kid likes some certain steak or whatever, and the next thing you know, the kid comes in, and I say, "Oh, da da da, you're the guy from Ohio. So you're the Mr. Basketball last year." And then they, you know, the server would come over to the table, and they'd say, "What the special is tonight?" And it'd be the steak that this guy likes. And Silas would line it all up. He was one of the best recruiters. I mean, yes. He worked hard at his craft and very successful. And he would just very, very informative on what kids like. So kids are kids, you know.
Right.
And some kids will take advantage of it, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Believe me. I've seen that happen, too.
And then they never even sign with us.
Right.
You know, they come in and eat everything and want everything and act big time. And then they go to some other school and you're like, "God, I didn't like that kid anyway."
Yeah. You know, I would run into that because I, you know, would talk to the parents and the kid about what we could do as far as equipment services. And, you know, you could tell if we had a kid on the hook or if we had a kid that, at least I could, or could if we had a kid who was just going through the motions.
Right.
Their eyes were rolling, didn't ask any questions, didn't care if they touched anything, this, that, and the other. Where if a kid was really interested, they instantly wanted to touch things, had a ton of questions, couldn't believe everything we did for them. And it was
right.
like, and I would report back to the coach. I said, "Now, you got to close this, but I think this kid is very interested."
Yeah.
So
it takes a lot of people to get a kid you know, to where they are to commit to a school nowadays, especially with all the competition out there with the facilities and the coaching staffs. And now with, as we talked yesterday, you know, you can kind of opt in and out every year, whether you want to play
right.
hoops or not. And it's really got to be, that's takes a lot of time from these coaches besides just molding young kids into men. As Clem Haskins used to always say, you know,
right.
that, you know, they take young kids and they turn them into wonderful men.
And women.
And women, of course, yeah.
and
it's just, it's tremendous. I mean, it takes a lot of people to do it.
Right. No, they, unfortunately, in this day of time, my brother owns a basketball academy in St. Louis, and one of these days I'm going to either via Zoom or in person give a speech to young people and their parents about college athletics. And unfortunately, or maybe some people say fortunately for the athletes, they can enter the transfer portal and basically threaten their school again to, "You better re-recruit me or I'm going to leave." And it's like, you know, but then people say, "Well, where's the loyalty from their coaches who could take a job somewhere else in a heartbeat?" So that's where college athletics have gotten to.
God, it's gotten to be a big business. I mean, it's gotten to be a huge business nowadays. So
yes,
it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Now I want to talk more about the giving Pat Montague, because there was a young man who was struggling and had a young son, and there was days where he didn't have, you know, money to have something to eat, and he would tell him to sit down and shut the hell up and I'll get you something. So I will always appreciate that you did that for me.
Yeah. You know, we take care of a lot of people down at Hoyts.
Yeah, you didn't charge me a dime, and every time I could make sure that I can line something up there, I do. You know, like when my son graduated from high school and 29 of his relatives from St. Louis came up and we had to do something about dinner, I called you and said, "Hey, can you set up a table or put us in the back room?" And unfortunately, somebody already had the back room, but you still put together tables for us to have dinner that night. And I have family members who still glow about it and talk about it. So,
well, that's what friends do, JB. You know that.
Yeah.
You know that.
So, but you just, you know, I just want people to know how giving Pat is. So, And as I have him blushing, I'm going to move on. So, and then one day I wandered in, and I don't mean to really put you on the spot, but in these days of time of social unrest, I walked in, and I noticed a ton of people, and there's always people of color in there, but this day, which was a Friday, the place was just packed with black people. And I was like, and I looked at you and I said, "Hey, what's going on?" And you looked at me, "Hey, it's First Friday, man. Don't you know about First Friday?" And I was just blown away that First Friday had moved to Hoyts.
Well, we had, you know, it's really great is we have a great clientele and always have been. You know, I grew up on the north side of Minneapolis, so I don't really see color. I see behaviors.
Yeah.
People always ask me if we have a dress code, and I say, no, we have a behavioral code. You know, you could be in a suit and tie and get kicked out of here just as well as coming in street clothes. I mean, I expect everybody to act decent. And if you don't, then we have an issue. I don't care what color skin you are, or what race you are, or what religion you are. I mean, politics, you know, we try to keep all that stuff out of Hoyts, and it's just about enjoying the moment. So when First Fridays approached me, Don Sellis, a great young lady, was kind of the band leader, and she said, "Hey, we could bring in on Friday nights if you want, if you extend happy hour all night and do this other stuff." And I thought about it at first, and I said, "Well, it kind of changed Shady Hoyts a little bit, but Friday nights are fun nights, and they're drinking nights anyways."
Right.
So I said, "No problem." So we started out, and the next thing you know, we were having like 300-400 people down there on a Friday night,
right,
all cocktailing and doing appetizers. But at the end of the day, you know, when the tills were all ringing, it's great. And then Saturday night's back to wife night and date night. And for me, it was awesome. And it still is today to look around our restaurant and to see such a diverse crowd from, you know, mom and pop who saved to come out tonight to grandma and grandpa, to families, to people of color, to people that are just coming to town that don't know where to go. It's always been that kind of eclectic meeting place of people from all walks of life, and we've embraced that at Hoyts. I don't shy away from that. Heck, it was an awesome time for us, and it helped us out immensely during 08 and 09 when the recession had hit, and we were still doing First Fridays at Hoyts. And eventually, after a while, you know, people get tired of going to the same spot. So after about a year and a half, 2 years, I think they ended up going to a couple of different joints after that. And I don't know exactly where it is now, but it was great. These were all professional people of color that they just like to mingle with people like themselves. And it was awesome.
Right. And it was just nice to see right in the heart of downtown, a place where we could get to, because after that, I started going again myself because I had lost, I had lost connection. And it was like just great to be able to go and whatnot.
Well, I know it shocked the heck out of our liquor license lady one night, Linda. I had a sidewalk patio before I had my back patio in the back lot, so I had a sidewalk patio, and it was a beautiful, you know, summer day like tonight, and there was probably at least 75 people with cocktail glasses in their hands standing on the sidewalk next to the valet zone, not necessarily inside the ropes of the patio, the sidewalk patio that I had there. And Linda was driving home, and she stopped and double parked her car, and she got out and put her hands on her hips, and she's just staring at the crowd. And I see her out there, and I come running out, and I go, "Linda, what's going on?" She goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, it's First Friday. We're having a little party. Everybody's drinking. We're enjoying it." So we got the sidewalk patio, and she says, "They can't do that. Everybody's got to go inside." And she was just like, you could see that fear and terror in her eyes that people of color were on the streets of Minneapolis enjoying themselves. So I said, "No problem." So I gave a big whistle and got everybody inside, and we were all back inside having a good time. And I called Linda up on Monday. I said, "Hey, do me a favor." I said, "If you don't want me to have my patio outside in the street, can I get a permanent expansion of premise license for the back lot?" And she said, "No problem." So now I have back lot parties where we can have 100 people back there, and we bring in a little music every now and then and have a little fun. But it was a really good thing that happened after that, and I've made so many great, wonderful relationships from the community. It's been just awesome. I mean, it's been a tremendous result of an experience that I took a chance on, and it was wonderful, really, really good.
And and you know as well as I did, there was not a cop in Minneapolis that would have done anything to you that
day. God, no. They, you know, and if they would have asked me to do anything, I'd do anything for them. I mean, there's not a problem with those guys, but
right.
And you never know. I mean, I'd say any given night we have, you know, I mean, our old sheriff Stanek loved the joint. Our new sheriff Hutchinson absolutely loves the joint. We love Hutch, and it's just been a great relationship with off-duty police officers, men and women as well, that hang out down at Hoyt's. So it's you know, you never know what's going on down at Hoyt's. I mean, it's one of the safest places to ever be.
Right. I mean,
you know, that's the greatest spot about it too. It's not, you know, there's nothing fearful about Hoyt's at all.
No. And yeah. You have, like we said earlier, you can have the elite athletes from, you know, because you're blocks away from the Target Center, you're blocks away from Target Field, you know, not that far of a drive, or if you want to take a long walk from the Viking Stadium. So,
and you know, the blessing being going back to even what you were saying, JB, with all of your connections back in the day with all the trainers from other schools, we have a tremendous support from other schools that come in for dinner, you know, obviously pre-COVID.
Right.
That come in for, you know, our hockey teams. I mean, we have Nadine, who used to skate for us at the U, and she's over at Ohio State. We did her twice this year when they were in for the Frozen Four, and then right before that, they played the Gophers. And we cater these teams as well, which is a tremendous, you know, for us, it's a great exposure to have these kids at the schools, obviously, are buying dinner for them, and we take care of all the colleges and stay within their budgets and work with everybody and understand all that. But then they, you know, they graduate and they come back to Minnesota and they say, where was that joint we got chops at? What the heck was the name of it? And they show up or with all the, you know, even your guys, I mean, all the guys from Michigan, all the men and women, the teams, I mean, they come down to Hoyt's all the time when they come to town. If they have the opportunity to do it, they do.
Yeah.
So,
and like I stated, my relatives, when they come in town, there will be at least one meal at Hoyt's.
Yeah. You know,
if they're in one for one day, then that one meal is at Hoyt's. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a break here, Pat, and for a commercial, and then believe it or not, somebody wants to advertise on this show outside of me. And no, Mike, it's Bradshaw and Bryant Law Firm. And Mike, I appreciate everything you do for me. So with that, we'll be back in a second here on the JB Low Tech Podcast with restaurateur Pat Montague.
When you need someone to listen, a lawyer you know and trust.
Congratulations to all the Minnesota businesses that scraped through the last year. It sure hasn't been easy, but we've done it together. And while we certainly need to move forward, it's good to reflect on what we've been through and the many losses. Here at Bradshaw & Bryant, we held a lot of Zoom meetings, increased our phone calls, and have done our best to keep up with all the changes while continuing to provide quality work. We'd like to thank everyone that turned to us with their personal injury and criminal needs, as well as the courtrooms for bringing the community back together to serve justice. We look forward to being part of Minnesota's growth and success for many years to come. I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. I hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, don't sign anything till you've talked to us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com.
Seeking justice for the injured, Bradshaw & Bryant.
Pick up your phone, I'm on the request line. DJ, please.
And we're back with Pat Montague, restaurateur, managing partner of J.D. Hoyt's. And we were just kind of talking about teams being affected, you know, as their visits by COVID. Can you share some anecdotes about the struggles of staying open and staying alive during COVID?
Sure. I mean, you know, the hardest thing for us is the stop and starts. I mean, when they when they shut everybody down for a while. I thought we actually had 2 weeks. So the first thing I did is start arranging contractors to come in, and we repainted and refloored and re-leathered the booths. And I mean, I did a lot of work, recovered the bars, and we did all this thinking that we only had 2 weeks before we were going to reopen. Then of course we didn't. And, you know, that was a long stretch for us not to open, but, you know, we follow, you know, the governor. We may not agree with all politicians,
right?
You know, I may feel differently personally, but my biggest concern is to keep my staff and my customers healthy and happy. And so whatever the guidelines are that they say we got to do, then we'll do. Some of it questionable, but I get it. And this COVID situation is no joke. I mean, I've lost a lot of customers, and a lot of friends due to COVID. So I take it seriously. But economically, I mean, they've given us some PPP opportunities, which, you know, in the end, it turns out to be a loan. And it's great to keep it alive, but there's no profitability. I'm only open 4 days a week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because I lose on Wednesday, Thursday. I break even Friday, Saturday. At the end of the week, I try not to lose too much.
Right.
And that's the key to it right now, to survive. And I think it's turning a corner. I mean, right now, everybody's getting vaccinated. You know, springtime is here. Everybody's feeling hope. The Twins are starting to play again. They're starting to draw fans. My biggest hurdle, and I think most restaurant guys downtown would agree with me, that it's just getting people to come back downtown. COVID is one thing, and getting the companies to, you know, Wells Fargo and Target to bring all their, you know, their workers back to work and not allow everybody to stay home changes the dynamics of what we can do as a restaurant as far as feeding people. Go now, feeding the community, we can do that. I mean, I can feed our neighbors. I can take care of that. We're lucky enough and fortunate enough to do that. But we built a business on many pieces of a puzzle, not just one.
Right.
So business travel is not going on right now. We built it on you bringing out clients when they come to town in Minneapolis, sporting events not going on, going to or coming after the Guthrie Theater, going to the First Avenue, going to bunkers. There's entertainment factors downtown, maybe coming out at 10 o'clock before you go to the club venue. There was all kinds of aspects of the puzzle that made J.D. Hoyt successful. So now we rely heavily on one, which is our friends and family, of course, and our neighbors and people that literally come into downtown just to go to J.D. Hoyt's and then go back home. So that being said, we want to make it as safe as we can at J.D. Hoyt's, you know, doing all the rules we can. And when you come in, you find out it really feels comfortable. It really is safe. It really is. We don't pull any punches. We kind of abide by the guidelines.
Yes, you do.
And we want to make it safe so that when you experience J.D. Hoyt's during COVID, you can say, I really enjoyed it, and I felt comfortable. I felt safe. There wasn't any, you know, I'm probably the most spritz guy you'll meet downtown. I'm spritzing my hands, washing the booths and the tables up afterwards. I'm sanitized from, you know, my tip of my nose to my toes every day. And it's amazing that with the clientele that we got coming down there and the respect we have for not only our staff but our clientele as well, that the response is great. That being said, COVID's one issue. The unrest in Minneapolis is a whole nother issue.
Right.
And that's an issue of fear that we have to get over. There's nothing fearful about protesting. There's nothing fearful.
Right.
There's fear of the media, the hype, the fear of downtown is unsafe, which is so untrue.
Right.
And I feel that Minneapolis, we're in the North Loop, so we're kind of in a little bubble down there, and we're as safe as you could possibly be downtown. But I think you know, when there's one incident of a mugging or whatever, it goes over across the airways and it's on the news. And, you know, I mean, this has been going on in Minneapolis since, you know, 1900.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is nothing new that you go downtown and somebody might be a victim.
Right.
You know, it's not because of unrest. It's not because of any other issue. I'm so happy to see that our you know, Brits is back open. I mean, the situations that happen are unfortunate, and I think it's more emotional than literally civic unrest is one thing, but it's more emotional where a door cracks open or a window breaks, and all of a sudden it's emotionally that these opportunities arise and not thought out, planned, bad people. I think that it's just an opportunity at the time. It's like leaving your car door unlocked and being surprised that somebody went through your car. Well, you know, you left it unlocked. What did you expect? Yeah, I mean, for me, it's, you know, it's an opportunist and not necessarily a societal unrest that's it's unheaved. I know with the trial going on now, we've experienced absolutely zero issues whatsoever, and I know the hype was that it was going to be terrible. And protesting right now is a vital part of our society, especially right. with the Chauvin case going on right now. I mean, this is a time that we need to protest. We need to, but peacefully.
Yes.
You know, and that, I think that is the key. Is, you know, to peacefully protest. Do we need that? We need to make sure that people are held accountable for their actions. Everybody, bad guys, good guys, and right. There's always going to be bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be bad police officers, good police officers. We need to weed out the bad guys. There's going to be bad protesters and good protesters. There's going to be really bad rioters.
Right.
You know, but everybody needs to be held accountable.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a good rioter. But
no. And it's not a matter of color either, and I think people get mixed up with that too. I mean, if you go out and see the protests at all and how peaceful they are and great they are, it's such a wide swath of society. It's mm-hmm. it's really cool. And there's people that I know with the trial getting closer to ending, there'll be people coming in from out of town that'll be agitators trying to get, you know, a window broke or something happening that gets everybody riled up to the next level. And we as a community have to make sure that we identify that and stop that.
Yes.
And it's not about, you know, protesting is one thing, but rioting is a whole different thing, which I totally disagree with. And I feel so bad for the restaurateurs on Lake Street and the businesses, the homes mm-hmm. that are literally still, you know, and even though they're not under siege, it feels right. like they're under siege still. And, you know, I'm old enough that in 65 there were riots up in my neighborhood on Plymouth and Penn, and that neighborhood's never come back. And here we are still fighting social unrest and doing it aggressively, which I understand to a point, but I don't agree with anybody's property being damaged. I mean, it's really a shame that this is happening and not being able to sit down and have a great conversation about it and something actually changing to get done.
Well, so. That was a story that was not being told, Pat, which was 90% of the people protesting were doing it peacefully and respectfully. And the 10%, like Tubby Smith told me, 10% of his team caused 90% of his problems.
That's a great analogy. It certainly does. Sometimes a lot less than that.
Right. There was about 10% of the so-called protesters who weren't protesters. They were rabble-rousers, and they came in town to cause destruction, be it, anarchists or Nazis, or, you know, some black people. It could, you know, but they were such a small part of it, but that was the part that was being reported on and not the peaceful people who were just marching and wanted to be heard. And it was so wonderful to see, because like you said, it was such a diverse crowd. I mean, old and young, black and white, Asian, Mexican, Latino. They were all there, and they just wanted to be heard, because they know that if one part of the population isn't being served correctly, then they would probably be next.
Oh, without question. And it's one of the tragedies, I think, but also the blessings to see that the community comes together and supports everyone. I don't think there isn't anyone that doesn't understand that there's good people and bad people in every part of business, whether it's policing or whether it's politicians or whether it's, you know, anybody, plumbers. You know, there's plumbers that'll rob you blind if you let them. But you know what I mean? I mean, it's just a matter of it was, and right now, I really believe right now the protesters that are protesting right now, I mean, their heart is so in the right place.
Right.
Emotions run high.
Yes.
And like you said, if you stir up it around, you know, and get everybody going, I mean, emotionally, I think that's the release for the rioting in Minneapolis, and not necessarily the we're going to burn it down is not the, you know, that's not the mantra. You know, it's just not it.
Right. Well, so yeah, it was just, it was interesting to hear your words about downtown because, you know, unfortunately there's a couple of, and one's a friend and the other is an acquaintance who, every time I hear them talk about downtown Minneapolis, you would think it's a war zone. And every time I go downtown to come to Hoyts, it's like, it's so calm. It's so peaceful. I mean, you look, it's going through a transformation with all of the condos that are being built down there and the young people who are moving back into the downtown area. It's just, and some of that is for senior citizens also. So it's just great to see the rebirth.
Yeah, you know, and I think that it's tremendous. It really is tremendous downtown. But I think the media plays a big part in exploiting one situation to make it sound like that happens everywhere, every night. And it just, it's a shame because downtown is a cultural venue. I mean, we have so many great entertainment venues and down all the old plays, and they're all waiting to get going again. And,
yes.
And for us in our business, we need to have all of those things in play and not just, you know, 10,000 people at the stadium during COVID is great. It's a great start.
Right.
It really is. But I mean, we're used to opening day being, you know, 45,000 people plus overflow.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, and it's just a whole different ballgame with COVID and with downtown, but we'll all see that, you know, we'll get past this trial and you know, bless everybody for being jurors and doing what they're doing, their civic duty, and we'll get through all this. And Minneapolis is a tremendous, wonderful city. And I know that people in our business and restaurants, it would be so easy to move to the suburbs. It would be so easy to move to Maple Grove or Eden Prairie or, you know, Wayzata, and give up on downtown and move out of it. But we're part of downtown as well. Every one of the restaurants, I mean, the Murrays do such a great job over there. You know what I mean? There's classical places that we love our downtown.
Right.
And I don't think there's one restaurateur that doesn't say, you know, Minneapolis, when you have people come in from out of town and they come into Minneapolis and experience that Minneapolis nice that is unexplainable to anybody, because it just is what it is. And people come in and they go, I can't believe how nice everybody is here in Minnesota. I mean, that's our charming, our little charm of being a small, big town, you know. And,
right.
And we don't want to lose that. And we're fighting for it right now, especially in our business. I mean, we're survivors. We're not going to go anywhere. You know, we'll do whatever we have to do to stay open and whatever we have to do to make it work. And we are right now. There's a lot of sacrifices being made by our staff, by, you know, our partnership, you know, to make things work and not run a business as a business.
Yeah.
You know, because right now it's not a business. It's definitely in survival mode, but it's not a business. It's not, you know, you open a business to make money and change your lifestyle and buy a new car and all that kind of good stuff. I don't know very many restaurateurs downtown that are doing that right now. So.
Well, like I said, I lost my favorite sports bar, Joe Sensor's. Locations are now closed. But to come to your place and to see the same cast of characters year after year after year after year and have them, you know, it's almost like a Cheers feeling for them to see you and they know my name and whatnot and know a little bit about you and greet you. It's a wonderful thing. And even if they don't know you, they greet you.
I don't tell them all the stories, JB. They just hear the good ones.
Well, we'll move on to some other fun stuff here. You also have, every once in a while, cigar tastings.
Absolutely.
Any in the works soon, I hope?
Yeah, you know, on the 25th of this month, I do believe we're having a new drink. Like our bar manager puts out a new drink list every year or so, every 6 months, and he's got a new one coming out. So we're having a dinner down at Hoyts on the 25th. It'll come out on our e-blast.
Okay.
And then after that, I'm sure the weather will be perfect that day because we're planning on it being perfect.
Yeah.
That we'll all go outside. I can only have 50 people max during COVID, and it'll be on a Sunday night because we're closed. So it'll be a private party, and then we'll go out back and have cigars after that, which is tremendous. We had a Woodford Reserve dinner last month, and that was a wonderful experience with cigars afterwards. It was really good, and I'm kind of cigar friendly, so our back patio, many cigars, many pets. We like all that kind of stuff.
Are more than cigar friendly.
And tonight, I got a feeling tonight, because it's going to be so perfect out there. It's Saturday night, and
right.
The weather's supposed to be great. I'm sure we'll have quite a few clients out there having an after dinner cigar out on the patio. So.
And then you started to host a reunion for my group.
Yeah.
The equipment managers. And we did it to honor Dick Mattson, because we knew we were soon to lose him. And then Todd Strassner has continued to get us together once a year and hang out and tell lies and tell stories, and, you know, the Godfather Harry Broadfoot shows up and increases the lies and the stories.
He encourages all that, right? Doesn't he?
And it's just good to see guys that you went to college with who went through the wars with you. You know, people will never understand what we do behind the scenes unless they actually see us slinging dirty clothes and big bags of stuff and big hampers and whatnot, and moving them and getting stuff set up and breaking stuff down. Because when we played at the Metrodome, it was a road game. We moved everything off campus over to the Metrodome and then had to pack it up after a game and drag it all back to campus. And so it was a road game for us. And to see those guys again, to relive those stories, and to have wonderful food and fellowship, it's a great thing for us.
Well, it's really good for you guys to do that. And when Todd calls and we pick out a game together, we try to pick out a Saturday day football game where we can take over that back room. And I mean, it seems to get bigger and bigger every year. And it's something I think the guys don't want to miss either, the guys and the gals as well. I mean, it's all the trainers and stuff that come down, so it's awesome.
Yes.
And it's just to see the guys and their families grow and blossom and talk about their children now that are grown men. And for me, it's a highlight of the year as well. I mean, I know you guys enjoy the heck out of it, but I tell you what, for me, it's a blessing as well. So it's just one of those deals that we get to do as a restaurant guys to make it happen if we can. Now to see some of those pictures up, I should have showed you that one last night. I had that picture up on the wall. I put it up on the bar side. We only put a few pictures back up after we repainted during COVID. I love that one we took out back with everybody. And Brian Berube is one of my one of my all time favorites. And we did his wedding down at Hoyt's, and him and his kids. I mean, his lovely bride, of course, but his kids growing up now, and they're all in college. And it's just great to see that whole family. Every year I get to see Brian, and then some of the kids either show up and pick him up or not. That, for me, that's a highlight too as well. And we miss Nicky dearly out of that. And it's nice that Keith comes every year and represents. And like I said before, I think, without a question that Keith was, Dick's rose,
right.
He was his play. He probably never thought he'd have kids. And it was awesome. I mean, awesome. Keith is a great man.
Not only did he not think he had children, he never thought he'd have a grandchild, which
right.
He has. He left. He had met his granddaughter and had got to spend a lot of time with her before he passed on. So that was a great thing for him. And I know I keep wondering when that's going to. No, anyway.
Many, many years from now.
I guess. But and to watch your family grow, your two boys, and watch their stories grow and change, and the one son is part of the restaurant, and your wife has always been a part of the restaurant.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those deals where my son Sam, very, very proud of him. He graduated from the U of M in chemical engineering, then went out to Caltech and got a master's in chemical engineering, and then he worked for NASA for about 9 months. But he didn't like Pasadena, so he came home and was going to look for a job here in the space fuel industry, which there wasn't really a lot, and then COVID hit. So right now he's out pounding the pavements, but in the meantime, you're back in the restaurant. Let's get a job going.
Right. Get some money in the pocket.
He worked all the way through college at the U. Both boys did. Gabe was a bartender for a while, and Gabe works at Optum Health, and he's very successfully graduated from Carlson over there at the U, and analytics is his major, and he's extremely good at what he does. And my lovely bride, I think her major is analytics too, but I'm not sure. she's extremely smart. I question her every day when I come home and that garage door works. I'm like, I got her fooled again?
Right.
Yeah. She's been the biggest blessing, of course, in my life. So it's great that the kid's making it through the restaurant business, and they get to see the socialness of it, which is truly, truly wonderful. They've met a lot of interesting people along the line that have formed their personalities as well. So they're both good young men. Really proud of both of them.
Well, you should be. And one of these days, they'll make you a grandparent too. So
yeah, well, we're not holding our breath. There's no pressure on those guys.
Yeah, I'm having dinner with my son later today, and I have to fight that urge every time we get together. When are you going to figure it out? when are you going to get going here? No.
Yeah. And you can't explain it to people that don't have kids.
Right.
You know, it's so true. I tell people I have my friends, I always call them my BK friends before kids, are always down at the bar hanging out, having dinner. And then I have my AK friends after they have kids, they're back. But during that process, when you're raising kids, I tell everybody it was the hardest thing I ever done and the most rewarding thing I ever done, all within about the same hour. Raising kids is extremely hard and difficult. And then at the end of the day, you can't explain it to people that don't have kids. So, it's just a blessing. I consider it one of those wonderful things in life. So,
no, I try not to do that to my son because I know that his mother does that to him. So, because he's told me, and it's like, no, I won't put the pressure on you. It'll happen when it happens. Right. I think I told him the other day, I said, well, you're about the age I was when I had you. So, you're still doing okay. things with this generation is so much delayed anyway.
Right.
Because they want to take a gap year and they want to graduate at their own pace. And then they want to find themselves after college. And then but then as soon as they find a job, they want to run the joint.
Right. And that's, it truly is a blessing that they have the opportunities to do that. Because a lot of times, when I was growing up, I didn't make it to college. I tell everybody that I got kicked out of every sorority on campus. That's why I didn't make it to campus. But for me, I went into the workforce because I had to. I didn't have any other doors that were open. I didn't have any choices. And I think our generation's children have so many choices in life to experience before they head to the opportunities of work. You know what I mean? And I say that as a way of opportunity for work, because I think in America we're very blessed that if you want a job, you can find a job that pays you money. It might not pay you what you want to pay, but it'll pay you money.
Right.
And to have that blessing for children to be able to look around and say, what do I want to do, not what do I have to do?
Well,
where I grew up is what I have to do, not what I wanted to do. Yeah.
Well, coming down and having dinner these past couple of months on every Friday helped me, because now I get to line up Daryl Thompson as a guest. So,
awesome!
it just keeps turning and turning and turning.
Yeah.
The wheel keeps turning. Well, sir, I have taken up an hour of your time on this fine Saturday morning. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. I appreciate everything you've done for me as a person and for my family. And you're such a wonderful. And when I say family, not only my blood family, but my extended friends who are family also. So, and they were the ones who kept pushing me to make sure you get Pat on, make sure, Brez and my brothers and a few others who kept saying, make sure you get Pat on. And I think even Daryl Mia had said,
oh, Mama Mia.
he's a listener to the podcast too, down in Arizona. So
awesome.
I'll send him a link to it every time I publish, and he's like, send me more, I want to hear. So
awesome.
Yeah,
well, JB, I love you very much, man.
I love you,
and
too.
You know, hey, it's been a great run, and let's keep her going.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. All right, my man, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
For giving of your time again, as usual.
Yeah.
Here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast, today's guest was Pat Montague, and nothing says it's best than good. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, JB.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
JB is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
Right on. Negro, black, African American.
Black.
Django, JB.
Damn, Dolomite.
Great God in heaven, you know I
JB,
our great Negro sex machine.